News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. It is a Thursday. We are one step closer to a Friday. And listen, by the way, I got to tell you, if you find yourself getting like way outside the range of our AM FM capability, which pretty much means you're out of North Alabama, South Tennessee. But if you find yourself getting outside of AM FM for WVNN, just know this, you can hear this show anywhere in the world, just anywhere in the big wide world. Go to the World Wide Web, go to rightsideradio.org. That's our website, rightsideradio.org. Click on Listen Live, and like I always say, no matter where you is, there we is. You can do that. That has got that website's got a ton of stuff on it. I mean, aside from the fact that you can stream the show live there, you can also pick up the podcast. I mean, right now there's something like 43,000 plus people that download our podcast, and it's just amazing to me that that happens. But it's just a blessing, and it's all on that website. You've got things that Copper and I write. We have an op-ed, each of us, that's published weekly. We have a number of other things on there, the photo gallery, the bios, the, you know, Right Side store. If you want a Right Side, like I'm right now having a cup of coffee out of my Right Side Radio coffee mug. The other day I wore my Right Side Radio socks. I was styling with my Right Side socks. I'm just saying, all that stuff's on the Right Side store, which is linked to the rightsideradio.org website. So check us out. That's all our stuff. It's all on there. Speaking of stuff, hey, Copper.
Yes, indeed.
You and Birdman been working on some new bump music, haven't you?
That's right. It'll be in soon.
Are we today, you think, or what? What's good?
Probably not today. Still need a program director to approve it all.
Oh, I know who that is. That's that Dale Jackson guy.
Yep.
All right. I'm putting in an official word with the Dale Jackson guy that I want my bump music. Well, anyway, we're spiffing up the show. We're shining things up like a shoe with some kiwi on it, and we're going to make sure the show stays shiny, but we're going to, have some new bump music. Thank you to Birdman and Copper for spicing things up a bit with it. How many we got? Like 10 of them?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Sweet. Okay. All right. We'll deal with it when the time comes. All right. Listen, I've got a full triple dipper for you, not the least of which is the storyline of what's happening in Ukraine. And this is pretty intense. And Copper, I didn't say it yet, but if you can grab clip one, it's just a real short clip of President Biden. We may go ahead and just do that now. Just let me know when you've got it up on the board there. But you know, the thing that really strikes me, and it's easy. By the way, my goal is never to let this show become a gripe session. Do I point things out? Oh, yes. Do I make statements of fact that I don't agree with certain things? Yes. Thank you, Copper. I see it. But that being said, I gotta point out the foibles when I see them, right? One of the things that is truly frustrating is that, you know, when everybody saw President Biden campaigning from his bunker basement, the thought was, well, he's scared of COVID. He's scared of COVID, which didn't inspire anything. But nonetheless, what I'm seeing, though, more and more is that's just who he is. He's like an in-the-basement guy. So yesterday he gave a presentation. He had all of his generals, and they did basically a photo op. I don't think there was any value to it. It was like, okay, we need to speak to the situation in Ukraine, talk about what we're doing. And so I remember looking at it, and there was General Milley sitting on one side of him, Secretary of Defense Austin sitting on the other, a row of generals sitting at the table going down both sides, or down each side of them, I mean. And the press all standing around taking pictures and President Biden making comments. Folks, it was the most unimpassioned, read from your notes, let me say it without having any feeling or care. I didn't really study it, so I have to read the notes to make sure I know what I'm saying. It was awful. Clip one is that. Copper, go ahead and play clip one.
And I knew they were tough and proud, but I tell you what, they're tougher and more proud than I thought. I'm amazed what they're doing with your help in terms of providing advice and the weaponry we're providing, along with the rest of NATO. Weapons and ammunition are flowing in daily, and we're seeing just how vital our alliances and partnerships are around the world. Our allies are stepping up, amplifying the impact of our response, and NATO is united, focused, and energized as it's ever been. I don't think that Putin counted on being able to hold us together.
Come on, guys, let's go. Come on. Thank you.
Okay, could somebody please get him a cup of coffee? I mean, so maybe it didn't sound as much in terms of listening to it on the radio, but when you watched it, when you see a leader of the free world sitting there with all of his generals for a photo op, and he's mostly staring at the paper and going, and, they've certainly fought better than anybody thought they would. And, arms and ammunition are still flowing. And then he like looks at his generals, like by looking at them, he's waiting for them to nod, and they're just staring. I remember thinking, I think Millie hates his job right now. That was my thought. I think I said it out loud. I was watching the TV and I said, Millie hates his job. And that's, I couldn't help but think. But folks, we're going to spend some time unpacking this Ukraine thing, regardless of the fact that our commander-in-chief cannot muster up the emotional tone inflection that that indicates that there's actually, you know, a war going on, something that is with one of our two near-peer adversaries. We're watching things happening on a regular basis every single day. We're watching potentially genocidal activities. We're watching a nuclear nation aggress against a near NATO nation. And all we can get is, well, they're holding on better than we had thought they were. Refer to my notes. Smile at the general. Say a few comments. And then they call, okay, that's all, folks. Thank you. Press conference over. All right. We're going to talk about it coming up next. Number one of the Triple Dipper, Ukraine. What now? What next? We're going to cover down on a number of things that I want to make sure you hear. I know we got a military-centric community, and we're going to cover it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Copper, I didn't write it on the board because you and I have been typing other messages, but would you please go ahead and get clips 2 and 3 ready and just put up there on the board that when they're ready so I can grab them when we need to. Clips 2 and 3. Okay, so listen, number one, the Triple Dipper, Ukraine, what now, Linsky what next? Lots of stuff happening. Lots of stuff. And it is it's amazing to watch, as what the world has discovered is that the vaunted Russian bear is a bit more toothless than we had imagined. I mean, I'll be honest with you. This is a David and Goliath, and it was seen as a David and Goliath. I mean, I think some officials even called it a David and Goliath moment, as Goliath, of course, being the Russians and David being Ukraine. I guess we ought to stop and consider what happened in the biblical narrative of David and Goliath. That being said, the Russians, if you remember, the Russians had literally advanced into Ukraine with every intent of taking the... Don't try and tell me they didn't. They were intent upon taking the country. They were going to topple the government. They were going to basically take Kyiv, the capital city. They were going to establish the land bridge along the eastern and southern rim of Ukraine immediately, so they had a land bridge between the disputed Donbass region on the east all the way down to the Crimean Peninsula, block off the port cities of Odessa, Mariupol, Kherson, and grab the opportunity to cut off from the sea any Ukrainian supply routes. At that point, all they would have left is the western border with Poland and the other NATO nations, and that has not worked out. We're seeing epic losses. We're seeing strategic blunders. We're seeing lack of communication. We're seeing multiple Russian generals being killed on the front lines. Why is that? Largely speculated that it's because the Russian command and control nodes are so ineffective that the generals are having to go so far forward to address situations on the ground that they wind up putting themselves in harm's way, and they're taken out by Ukrainian snipers. Okay, that being said, what's happened now is that the Ukrainian government is still intact. Kyiv was never taken, although there were tragic situations in and around Kyiv where it appears that the Russians committed you know, multiple war crimes, assaulting and killing Ukrainian civilians. They're finding bodies in mass graves. They're finding bodies with their hands tied behind their back, executed in the streets, their bodies left. It's been a tragic set of circumstances. The Russians now, strategically speaking, have begun to regroup, reconsolidate, refit, rearm, and move themselves back to the east, announcing that the first phase of the operation is now complete. Bull crap, you got waxed. Now, Ukraine suffered greatly, but Russian troops got waxed, and they've moved back to a different strategy. Putin has now replaced his military leadership, taking a general who was known as the Butcher of Syria, and placed him in charge of all Russian troops in the Ukrainian operation. That general has apparently seen fit, and Putin has agreed to pull things back and to basically establish the Donbass, the land bridge on the south through Mariupol, and try to connect the Crimean Peninsula to Russia via land. All right, now that I've laid the groundwork and given you the mental map, let me just say this. The siege of Mariupol is ongoing. Not since World War II have we seen a city so devastated. I mean, if you've seen pictures of destroyed German cities in World War II, like picture something from Saving Private Ryan or something like that, that's what we're looking at. Mariupol is a devastated city. Well, pulled this from the understandingwar.org website. This is the website of the Institute for the Study of War, General Jack Keane's organization. It says basically the key takeaways beginning as of yesterday are the next phase of the Russian offensive in Ukraine's east has reportedly begun, largely with artillery and air bombardments, supporting a few small-scale ground offensives, meaning they're not committing ground troops to major offensive operations yet. In other words, they're not pushing the lines, but they are definitely underway with heavy strikes of artillery and air bombardments. Russian officials and media are likely preparing to declare victory in Mariupol in the coming days, and that happened, by the way, yesterday. Mariupol, they are holed up largely. The Alamo right now in Mariupol is a major factory that has underground tunnels where civilians are holed up, and the remaining Ukrainian fighters are there. It's a Ukrainian Marine Brigade that has been defending that site, and they are in the Alamo as we speak. It says the Russians may be attempting a single-wide encirclement of Ukrainian forces in certain areas in and around Donetsk, which is on the eastern rim. And their operations continue, though, to proceed hastily as if President Vladimir Putin has set an arbitrary date by which they must succeed. It's largely believed they're trying to get this done by May 9th, because May 9th is a major military holiday in Russia. They call it Victory Day. It's the victory over Nazi Germany. And symbolically speaking, it's believed that Putin wants to make some great announcements of how things are going in Ukraine, and he needs this land bridge. He needs Mariupol. He needs some measure of victory in the Donbass region. Hey, I got a caller on line 3. Let me grab that real quick. Brian from Huntsville. Hey, Brian, Phil Williams, how you doing today, man?
Doing well. I hope you are also.
And yes, sir.
Just to go back in history a little bit, it seems kind of like the inverse of when the Germans got bogged down at a tractor factory in Stalingrad.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? That was an epic battle, and that's a part of what the Russians now celebrate on May 9th, isn't it?
I believe so, sir. So I thought I'd toss that out there. Y'all have a blessed day. Good night.
All right, you too, man. Yep, that's history, and it's irony at the same time. So, Institute for Study of War, their takeaway is the new front is on the east. It has begun. Mariupol has not fallen. BBC, dated yesterday, reports Ukraine, Russia bombards cities as the Eastern Offensive begins. Confirmation here of the Institute for Study of War's position. But it basically says that Russia is trying to break through Ukrainian defensive positions to establish their hold on the Eastern Rim. It says strategic port of Mariupol, meanwhile, has come under intense bombardment. Pro-Russian forces have reportedly begun an attempt to storm the city's Azovstal steelworks, where Mariupol's final defenders have been holding out for days. It says that Ukraine says civilians and children are among those holed up in the complex, even though Russia denies it. It's Mariupol is key, by the way. And you know, I said on the show once before, something that really struck me when I was in Afghanistan was that long road between Bagram and the capital city in Kabul. And unlike everywhere else I had been in Afghanistan, and I was all over the place, unlike everywhere else I had been, the roads did not go through villages. That you could see villages off in the distance on each side, but it's as if that road did not have any life on it. It was just a concrete highway built by the Soviets. And somebody told me that, no, what happened was the Soviets came in there and they leveled the ground and put a huge field of fire, you know, basically on both sides. You couldn't have a village on the road. It almost appears that's what they're doing in Mariupol. They're leveling Mariupol. They're making it untenable. And in part, that's because I believe there's a highway that runs through the Mariupol area that's going to connect the Donbass and the Russian border with the Crimean Peninsula. And they don't want anybody being able to attack their troops as they go up and down that road on that land bridge. There's that. All right. I'll tell you what. The question remains, BBC again, dated April 14th. Is Russia committing genocide? I've got an audio clip. Copper, clip two, you good to go on that? Clip two is ready. So General Jack Keane pointed out, this is really the Russian way of war. This attack on the civilians that we're seeing. And by the way, keep in mind, when the U.S. goes to war, I mean, we went to Baghdad with what's called a protected target list. In other words, there were things you tried to avoid. You avoided the collateral damage. You basically tried to make sure you were specific in your targeting. And there were certain facilities like religious and cultural and governmental facilities that, if possible, you didn't mess with them because they might be needed later and it could inflame the populace. Well, not the Russians. Clip two is General Jack Keane talking about the fact that this is the way Russia goes to war. Go ahead and play clip two, Copper.
Has been the civilian population, and that means aerial bombardment and, where possible, certainly rocket and tube artillery. And that'll continue because this is an important part of the Russian aspect of military operations. They continuously want to break the will of the people, put pressure on Zelensky, that people are being killed every single day, and they want that emotional and psychological pressure there. Lviv is just another city that they do some of this at. This is the first time they've taken casualties, and regrettably so. But they're not yet focused on the supply lines that are coming out of Poland or coming out of other countries into Ukraine to give them the munitions that they so desperately need. The Russians have just not been able to organize themselves with the combat power to do that, and at the same time, focus on this main effort that's taking place in the Donbass region.
Let me switch gears.
All right, so you heard it there in the early parts of his comments, is that the Russian way of war is to try and break the will of the actual populace, not necessarily the military, but the populace as a whole. It's part of what he's doing, Putin is doing, to try and bring Volodymyr Zelensky and the Ukrainian people to their knees. Continue to kill people, to kill them wantonly, and to make sure that it's understood that the longer you go on, the more of your people we will kill. Not just we will defeat your military and have your government do what we say. They want to break the will of the people. Well, some say this is genocide. Story here in BBC, dated April 14th, calls that into question, saying that UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson has said the attacks on civilians in Bucha, which is just to the west of Kyiv, do not look far short of genocide, in his words. The United Nations defines genocides as killing members of a group of citizens, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of that group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about physical destruction, imposing measures intended to prevent birth within the group, or forcibly transferring the children of another. Has Russia committed genocide? That's a question that's going to have to be answered, because they are certainly attempting to break the will of the people. And all the things I just cited, those are all happening right now in Ukraine. All right, let's take the first break. We'll come back and continue this this thread. Ukraine, what now? What next? Number one of the Triple Dipper. Even right now, as I'm speaking, breaking news on TV, apparently the Biden administration is announcing another round of financial and military aid to Ukraine. Some say it's a little too late, but nonetheless, they got to have it, given what we can, I say. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, a brief aside here, I got to tell you, when I'm resourcing the show, which I hope you hear me rattling the paper, you know that I literally spend a great deal of time every single morning getting the triple dipper kind of rounded out with stories that elaborate and help to define the points that are trying to be made. That being said, when I go out there, I've got a number of go-to sources, some of whom, you know, I use on a regular basis, and one of those is 1819news.com. They're advertising on the show right now. You can hear the ads. I hope you've clicked on their website to check it out. In fact, I would appreciate it if you would. Go check them out, 1819news.com. It's named 1819 News because that's the year that Alabama became a state. Because the folks, and I know them, by the way, the folks that run 1819 News, they are solid. They love this state. And they are determined to give you a news source that calls the balls and the strikes. You know what I'm saying? They're not getting out there with a news that is not really the news. When you read a news story on 1819, it's not filled with skew and spew, is what I like to say. They are literally giving you the straight-up reporting. Now, they have editorial content, sure, but it's on the side. You can see it. It's labeled editorial content. The news is just the news. And by the way, a lot of their stories are things that are also designed to make you proud of where you live. Isn't it great to actually go to the news once in a while and go, man, I feel better after reading the news? That doesn't happen very often these days, but at 1819, they're committed to not just telling you things that need to change or reporting things that happened. They're also telling you, and hey, by the way, here's some cool stuff about Alabama. So check them out, 1819news.com. That's 1819news.com. Friends of mine, solid and reporting on a regular basis the things that you want to know. 1819news.com. All right, we are in number one of the Triple Dipper. Going to spend a little more time on this because I haven't had a chance to do this in probably 4 or 5 days. Ukraine, what now, what next? I have said it before, and I still believe that this is the biggest story of the decade. I mean, it's only 2022. It's the biggest story of the decade, I believe, past 2022. There may be things that happen coming up that we haven't foreseen yet, but I'm going to tell you right now, when you see one of what is often referred to as a near-peer adversary for the United States, a nuclear nation, Russia, aggressing against other countries and literally storming across the border with massive troop movements in conventional warfare, unlike anything we've seen since basically... I mean, we've seen this much, haven't seen this much troop movement, true conventional troop movement, since the invasion of Iraq or Desert Storm. And truthfully, we haven't seen this much destruction since World War II. It is on epic scale right now in some parts of Ukraine. But as I reported earlier, it ain't going in the Russians' favor. That's what's amazing to me. Now Ukraine is suffering. And they are suffering. I talked about the genocidal, at least the war crimes, at the very least, tactics being used. General Keane actually agrees and believes that this is the Russian way of war. Break the will of the populace. But the Mariupol siege right now, which is what it is, that literally they are holding out in a big way and have made it miserable for the Russians. Story off Fox, dated yesterday. Ukrainian Marine commander makes a last-ditch plea for evacuation. Basically, what happened here is the Ukrainian Marine unit that has been holding out in the Azovstal Iron and Steel Works, which is like the Alamo for them right now. It's a big factory with lots of underground tunnels that give them the ability to move about, knowing there's bombs up above. He made an appeal. He says, "We're probably facing our last days, if not our last hours," said Major Serhiy Volina, commander of the 36th Separate Marine Brigade. He said Russian forces outnumber the Ukrainians 10 to 1. He said, "We're only defending one object, the Azovstal plant, where in addition to military personnel, there's also civilians who've fallen victims to the war." He said, "We have more than 500 wounded at the plant and hundreds of civilians sheltering here." And he encourages there to be an opportunity to evacuate the civilians. That's ongoing right now. The follow-up story to that later in the same day, Fox News also reported that Russia had issued an opportunity for the forces in the Marine unit to lay down their arms, and not a single one of them agreed to it. It says an offer from Moscow this week for Ukrainian soldiers in Mariupol to lay down their arms in exchange for a safe evacuation had no takers. One report says what the Marine commander says, no one believes the Russians. No one. No one believes the Russians. Turned into a total tactical flop, and Russia's Ministry of Defense had to announce that it will once again offer another opportunity. We'll keep asking, they say. I got news, they ain't taking. Well, Putin had something to say about that just today. I'll tell you about that. It's interesting. It's basically a spin by Putin himself on what's happening in Mariupol. All right, folks, we are at the top of the hour. News coming up right now. We'll be right back with more on Ukraine, what now, what next. And then heading down into the show, we're talking about Know Your Role and later on the Grand Council. Y'all stay tuned. We got a full show for you. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.
It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM. Like that dude just said, yes, indeed, this show is solid, conservative, and just plain right. Right Side Radio, that's us. And Phil Williams, glad to be with you here on a Thursday afternoon, 3.07 p.m. Listen, I'm in number one of the Triple Dipper. I'm talking about Ukraine, which is actually up on the big screen again right now. But I gotta break this for 1 second and give you breaking news. This is breaking news on a separate subject. You may have, if you heard the show yesterday, you may have heard me talk about the fact that after Disney, and I had a whole segment yesterday called The Woke Wars, Disney was getting pummeled by the Florida state government because Disney had chosen to take such an overt stance against public policy being enacted, rightfully so, and rightfully done, by the Florida state government. Ron DeSantis, as governor, once again leading from the front, chose to go ahead and say, that's fine, Disney, and you've been getting lots of special privileges under state law for a long, long time, like since the 60s. Disney has had this thing called self-governance. They had a development district set up just for them where they didn't wind up having, it's almost like they were a county unto themselves. They didn't have to pay special property taxes within the counties. They didn't have to do any number of other things. They didn't have to deal with public utilities. It was self-governance allowed for a major, major company that has so inflicted itself on state politics that just about 1 hour ago, breaking news, let's see when the story came out. The story came out at 1:23, so an hour and a half ago, bam. The Florida House of Representatives joined with the Florida Senate's vote yesterday and passed a bill that's going to dissolve Walt Disney World's special governing power in the state. It says the move could have huge tax implications for Disney, whose series of theme parks have transformed Orlando into one of the world's most popular tourist destinations, and it serves to further sour the relationship between the Republican-led government and a major political player in the state. So I'm going to tell you right now, that's huge. I mean, so here in Alabama, apparently, state government's going to kowtow to the casino interests who want a monopoly and demand to have their names written into the legislation to help them. And the governor says that's their biggest regret, they didn't pass that. Whereas down in Florida, they're saying, hey, you know what? If you're going to be a woke company, if you're going to do things that are adverse to public policy, if you're going to shout against us and use your political clout, we're going to make sure you understand that all those special privileges you thought you had, you don't have them anymore. And so, yeah, this is not a shot across the bow. This is a torpedo in the bow. And we'll see how this goes down. But, you know, maybe Disney will fight it. But from the last report I read, Disney had something like 40 paid lobbyists in the state house down in Florida working their issues. And they could not get this done because they had so inflamed everybody in state government down there. They were sick of them and said, you know what? Okay, fine. We're done with this. All right, that just happened. Breaking news. I just gave it to you. That's basically a segue off of yesterday's segment called The Woke Wars. Disney smacked down by the Florida state government. Ron DeSantis, once again, leading from the front. All right, so I'm in number one of the Triple Dipper, and I'm still talking about what's happening right now in Ukraine. During the last news break, they even mentioned the fact that President Biden said today at the podium, as he announced an additional round of aid to Ukraine, that there's no reports that Mariupol has fallen, that they believe that there are still Ukrainian holdouts in Mariupol. That being said, Putin's declared victory. Did you know that? Putin even said today in an interview, this is Fox News dated today, Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered his troops not to storm the last remaining Ukrainian stronghold in the besieged strategic city of Mariupol. And he praised his defense minister for the liberation of the city. This is a quote. He says, completion of military actions on liberation of Mariupol is a success, he said. Congratulations. What's happening here is, and Putin even says it. In fact, I ought to read his quote rather than just say it. He says, this is the case when we have to think. That is, we will always have to think, but in this case, it's even more important. What does that mean? To think of saving lives and health of our soldiers and officers. One does not have to climb into these catacombs and crawl there underground around these industrial objects. In other words, what they saw was that the effectiveness of the Mariupol defense in and around that factory I told you about is so intense that there was no value in trying to take it. He believes he can declare success without seizing that factory complex and all of its underground tunnels. Okay, there's that. Let me see here. Let me root through. Can you hear the paper rattling? I got lots of stuff. Here's one. Let me go with this. This is interesting. And Copper, you still good on clip three? You good on that? Just highlight that board. Thank you very much. All right. Story off the BBC. Dated 2 days ago, April 19th. Ukraine war, Kyiv's allies pledge more weapons to help win the war. The U.S. and others have vowed to send artillery, anti-tank, and air defense aid to Kyiv during a 90-minute video call on Tuesday. Ukraine says it needs the weapons to help defend itself. Of course it does. So what we've got here is a situation where more and more nations are recognizing that having supplied some weapons, they're going to supply some more weapons. Having supplied those weapons, they're going to supply even more weapons because the whole fear of whether it would escalate, well, the escalation is there. The whole fear of what Putin will say, well, forget what Putin will say. We're beyond that point now. Well, there's some interesting things that are happening, not the least of which is, I mentioned it briefly the other day, but I pulled the article for this story. So that was the BBC. This is Forbes. Forbes dated yesterday. The Ukrainian Air Force just got bigger. Someone gave Kyiv more MiG parts. Huh. All right. So it says in this particular story off of Forbes that the U.S. Defense Department spokesman John Kirby confirmed that Ukraine's airmen now have more flyable fighters today than they did in early April. How does this happen? They're not manufacturing them. Well, somebody gave them stuff. It says donations of airplane parts made it possible. He says, quote, I would just say without getting into what other nations are providing, that Ukraine has received additional platforms and parts able to increase their fleet size. All right, those MiG-29s we're talking about, that's what they've got more of. I mean, like a significant number. It says, in any event, the extra parts that they received, which may not have been actual flying airframes, they may have just been sufficient parts to bring more of their planes up to speed and get them back in the air, has put an extra 20 MiG-29 fighters into the air for Ukraine. That's significant, y'all. But one of the things that we've learned, General Jack Keane has said that one of the lessons learned is that we should have been doing this all along. So I'm going to play clip three for you in just 1 minute. But let me say this. The other thing that's about to happen, as Ukraine, which has done what it can with what it had, story off the Washington Examiner, Russian forces have carried out more than 1,000 strikes in the east right now. Literally, over 1,000 missile, artillery, and warplane strikes against targets in the eastern Donbass region. And in Mariupol, of course, I've told you about that. They're flattening it. But it says right here in another article on Forbes dated yesterday that the T-72s, The T-72 being the main battle tank for the Ukrainian army and for the Russians. T-72s, it says Ukraine's 5th Tank Brigade could roll into battle any day now. And I thought, what do you mean roll into battle? Well, what they're saying in this particular article is, as Ukraine has inflicted major damage on the Russian fleet in the Black Sea, they even sunk the Moskva, which was the flagship of the Russian fleet in the Black Sea. Sunk it. Along with several other ships I was not aware of. They sunk the Saratov, which was a 370-foot Russian landing ship. They sunk several other smaller ones. And then, of course, the Moskva was an actual anti-ship crew. It was a destroyer. They actually sunk it. Well, it spooked the Russian Navy to the point that it says that all the remaining surface combatants in the Black Sea fleet sailed 100 miles off coast to make sure they were out of range of the anti-ship missiles the Ukrainians were using, which basically means that a seaborne landing against Odessa, which is a port city that's like where 70% of all of Ukraine's imports come from the sea through Odessa, that Odessa does not appear to be at risk now of having to deal with a seaborne invasion. There has been a tank brigade with 3 battalions of up to 30 tanks each, T-72s, that has been in Odessa prepared to defend the city that does not appear to be necessary anymore and may now be able to go to the Donbass and inflict major damage. So you've got an entire tank brigade and more MiG-29s coming to bear. General Jack Keane has some comments on this that I thought were interesting. He said that one of the major lessons of the war is the fact that we should have been doing this sooner in terms of arming them. So that being said, Copper, clip 3, let's go ahead and play General Jack Keane. Go ahead and play it.
I think the major lesson we got to learn here is we should have been providing Ukraine arms and munitions a long time ago and taking Putin's threats seriously. Mm. And we should take President Xi's threats seriously and be upgunning Taiwan now, right, not in an emergency way that we're doing here with Ukraine. Let's get it in there and make it a part of the deterrence to prevent President Xi from actually conducting that attack if he believes the cost is going to be too great. And there's challenges there because you just don't go across the border as Russians are doing in Ukraine. There's 100 miles of ocean in the Taiwan Straits that separates mainland China from Taiwan. And that is a formidable operation to conduct.
I hear you. Play offense, less defense. It always feels like we're on our heels with this administration, and that is sometimes problematic. General Jack Keane, thank you so much. Great to see you this morning.
So what he's basically saying there is we knew that Putin was massing troops for so long, and we did nothing. That we had lethal aid that had already been promised by the Trump administration that the Biden administration chose not to provide until much later. That we just recently decided to give them, and I'm glad we did, give them 11 Mi-17 HIP helicopters that were originally slated for Afghanistan. Well, they haven't been needed by Afghanistan for quite a while, so why were we hanging on to them? But we just decided to transfer them to them like a few days ago. We've got Javelin missiles, which are taking a toll on the Russians right now, and Stingers, which are taking a toll on the Russian Air Force right now. But we're continuing to ship them to them in dribbles and drabbles. And I'm saying, why are we doing it? And I agree with General Keane. Why didn't we upgun them early on? What could have happened had we armed them effectively before the invasion began when we saw 190,000 troops massed on the border? We don't know where it's going to end yet. Story off of Yahoo, dated April 19th. U.S. officials say they see no clear path to negotiate an end to Russia's war in Ukraine. Well, that's where we are right now. We don't know for a fact how it's going to end, but right now, top State Department officials do not see diplomacy as being effective. It's going to be a slugfest for a while longer. God bless them. God bless them. Ukraine has been wearing the Russians out, and I hope they continue to bloody their nose, and I hope we continue to provide them what they need. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. That's it for number one of the Triple Dipper. We're moving next to the next one. You might want to hear it. Know your role. Oh, yeah. You'll see what I'm talking about when I get back. You stay tuned.